And so, members, as always, we're going to ask you to mute your feeds and then raise your hands on the participant tab at the bottom if you would like to ask a question, and then just leave it up and the staff will put your hand down again. And through the wonders of text, I'll be getting the list and hopefully can follow along in calling on folks. So I'd like to call to order this informational meeting of the Health and Human Services Finance Division. Thank you all for attending today. We really appreciate it. The purpose of today's meeting is that as we're going into special session, we obviously it hasn't been officially announced, but we expect there will be a special session coming up next week. There are some matters that are kind of a little bit on the urgent side that we're hoping to be able to take care of during the special session. And even though we can't right now pass any bills because we're not in session, we wanted to give members and give the public an opportunity to see the bills that we hope to pass, that we these are all bills that we either believe we have agreement on already with the with all four caucuses and the governor's office, or that we're working toward that, and we hope to have it. But we are hearing these today because we think that they deserve to be heard before the regular session starts. And so that's why we're having the hearing today and using all your valuable time. So first of all, we'd like to start with a bill that has my name attached to it, the Human Services Technical Corrections Bill. Oh, and I just should say that even though our CLA, Krista Niedernhofer, is noting attendance, since we're not in a regular hearing, we're not going to announce a quorum. I don't know whether we would have one or not, but this, as I noted, is just for information. So there's something called the Human Services Technical Corrections Bill. This is a bill that came from staff, and those who have been around for a while know that it's really not uncommon at all to have these technical correction bills. And we don't have testifiers, but I'm just going to ask Mr. Berg to walk through what the bill does and why we need it, and so that you'll all be familiar should you see it come to a House floor near you. So, Mr. Berg, welcome.
Madam Chair, can people hear me?
Oh, yes.
Okay. That's usually not a problem for me. Okay, this bill is, as the chair mentioned, it makes some technical corrections to the 2019 omnibus bill. I will start out by telling you that it has zero net fiscal effect. It is just moving some money around in fiscal year 21 so that it is in the correct budget activities as we go forward into the 22-23 budget. The language has also been agreed to by both the House and Senate staff, the department, and the Department of Minnesota Management and Budget. So there is no controversy about the language or any adjustment. Section one, it moves $425,000 in for the Fraud Prevention Initiative Grants Program out of that budget activity in fiscal year 21 on line 1.11. Then it goes on to set the correct base and fix the base riders for that item in that section. In section two of the bill, it moves, it adds in $500,000 in fiscal year 21 to the Children's Services grant budget activity for the Safe Harbor program. That money, as you'll see, was later is taken out of the Children and Economic Supports grants activity in section three. There's only one difference here. In this case, the rider was put in the correct position, so there's no rider adjustment in section two because the rider is where it was supposed to be, but there was some miscommunication between DHS and the legislative staff about the correct coding on the spreadsheet. So The $500,000 is moving from budget activity 45, where it was appropriated, or 47, where it was appropriated, to budget activity 45, where the rider already is. Then we go on to adjust the rider, or we don't go on to adjust the rider on that one. Then we go on in budget activity 47, where we are both adding the $425,000 that is being moved out of the central office, and we are removing the $500,000 for safe harbor grants that shouldn't be there. So the numbers there change by a net negative $75,000. And again, we adjust the bases in all these cases going forward. So that was a very long way around to say we're moving one grant from central office to children and economic support grants. We're moving another one from children and economic support grants to children's services. And it has zero net effect, and everyone at the staff level agrees on it.
Okay, well, thank you for that, Mr. Burgess. Anybody have questions on that? We are not having a test, but you know, this is why we depend on Mr. Berg to be dogging these things for us. But any questions from anyone? All right, not seeing any. All right, thank you so much, Mr. Berg. Appreciate it. Okay, the next bill up is, again, doesn't have a number yet, but this is Representative Bierman is going to bring this. And let me turn it over to Representative Bierman just to introduce the bill. And then we have a testifier and then we have staff available for questions. Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Thanks for being here this morning. So I'm bringing forth a technical fix for a bill that we previously passed for the Certified Community Behavioral Health Clinics, which began in Minnesota as a federal demonstration project. You may remember there were six or eight in the country, and we had a series of them here in Minnesota. And these clinics are part of a new model of integrated care, providing crisis mental health and substance use services across various settings and providers. So our previous bill moved the CCBHC model into a benefit under medical assistance. Unfortunately, some delays at the federal level and COVID-related delays here at the state level this year slowed this transition, and final federal approval has not come in yet. So this bill, members, will permit the Commissioner of Human Services to reimburse the CCBHC clinics operating as an approved Minnesota clinic and the schedule and pay the scheduled reimbursement rates for services until federal approval and federal matching funds become available. Ultimately, members, there will be no fiscal impact with this fix, but there will be a continued impact for better healthcare outcomes if we grant this interim authority. So I also ask members to see the letter from the Minnesota Association of Community Mental Health Programs. Madam Chair, we do have testifiers if they are needed, and I will stand for any questions.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Representative Bierman. So I see we have Ginny Palin here, and I'd like to have her say a few words. And Ms. Palin, I think, why don't you go ahead? I think this is a really important model, and I don't know if everybody remembers. It was great that Representative Bierman just explained a little bit, but if you wanted to add to that, just to give us context, that would be great too. Thank you. Go ahead, please.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm Ginny Palin with the Minnesota Association of Community Mental Health Programs, and we are a state association of community mental health programs across Minnesota, including the 8 certified community behavioral health clinics in the state. And we've been working with this cohort of clinics from the very beginning of the demonstration. As Representative Bierman had mentioned, this started out as a federal demonstration that was approved by Congress back in 2014. The first demonstration phase started in 2017 and has since been extended several times. in 2019, the state of Minnesota approved a statute to allow us to move this this model of care into a permanent Medicaid benefit and granted the state the authority to seek that approval from CMS, from the federal government. Throughout that time period, we were working on making that transition and seeking that federal approval. And then, as Representative Bierman had stated, with some delays in implementation due to the pandemic and some other federal delays, this has really kind of created a bit of a timing issue in allowing these clinics to be able to be paid that enhanced federal Medicaid rate underneath this model. So it was really more of a timing and cash flow situation that we are trying to correct to allow these clinics to be able to be reimbursed without having to wait for the several months while we're waiting for the for federal approval on the bill.
Okay. Are there questions from members? I'm not seeing any. I do have one question, Ms. Palin. Maybe you can help me with this. So under the bill, there's a, in order to make it fiscally neutral, there's a provision that says that if the approval doesn't happen, that the state can recoup the money from the clinics. That seems pretty draconian to me. I don't know how much money we'd be talking about, but can you comment on that? This is obviously part of making the bill fiscally neutral at this point. And I think there's probably very high expectation that the approval will actually happen. I mean, there's no reason to believe it wouldn't, right? Can you just kind of comment on that piece?
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you. That is correct, Madam Chair. This was really a provision put into place to protect the state budget in the very unlikely event that CMS does not approve the state plan amendment that has been submitted. We are feeling very, very optimistic that CMS will approve it. There is some precedent. The feds have approved at least four other state plan amendments that have been submitted to make this model permanent across those states and their Medicaid programs. So at this point, we have no reason to believe it won't be. It's really just a matter of timing.
Okay, thank you. And I know that Mr. Burdick is here from DHS, and does he, Matt, do you have any comment on that? Or you want to just say ditto?
Thanks, Madam Chair. Matt Burdick with DHS. Yes, I'll just reiterate what's already been said and happy to answer other questions, but we've been providing technical assistance on this language, so.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Any other questions from members? All right, not seeing any. All right, thank you very much, Ms. Palin, Mr. Burdick, and Representative Bierman. Thank you.
Thank you, members.
So we will move now to the next bill, which is, again, doesn't have a bill number, but waiver extension of telehealth by residency. And Representative Schultz is going to present that for us. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Chair Liebling. So this bill basically extends the expiration date for something we passed earlier this year during the 2020 regular session. And what we passed was an ability to use and reimburse for telemedicine services, allowing originating site to be the patient's residence. So this extends it. It was going to expire February 1st of 2021. This bill simply extends the expiration date to June 30th, 2021. And we have, I believe we have a few testifiers, and in your packet, there's a letter from the Mayo Clinic that explains the importance of allowing telemedicine services, particularly during COVID.
Okay, thank you, Representative Schultz. And before we get to the testifiers, let me just say, so that we maybe possibly saving some time, is that I think probably all of us, all of the members on the call, probably have heard from a lot of our constituents, a lot of healthcare providers, that telemedicine right now is a big issue. A lot of providers really like it a lot. And we also know that there are a lot of big issues that are going to have to be worked out as we figure out how to integrate telemedicine into what we do going forward. The pandemic has really pushed this forward in a big way, and there's been a lot of relaxation of regulations around this, and it's been used very effectively in a lot of cases. And just to put some context out there, as we move this, as we have this language to move the sunset of this one piece that we have in the state, it's my expectation, and I think the Senate also, that we're going to be doing a lot of work around it, this in this regular session, because there are just lots of issues to unpack around telehealth. And this one we're dealing with today is just one. And we had, when we initially established this sunset for this particular piece, we, no one of course knew that the pandemic was still going to be going and that this was going to be such a big issue. So by moving the sunset out, essentially to allow us in session to figure out what to do for the longer term. So with that context, then I'd like to call on, I think I have Dr. Sarah Manny. And Dr. Manny, please go ahead and please just introduce yourself and tell us who you're with.
Great. Thank you so much. Thank you, Chair Liebling and committee members, for this opportunity to weigh in on this really important issue of healthcare in Minnesota. My name is Dr. Sarah Manny. I serve as Essentia Health's Chief Medical Information Officer, and I also care for children as a pediatrician here in Duluth. So throughout the pandemic, being able to deliver telehealth services directly to a patient's residence has proven to be a really reliable care delivery model, and it ensures that patients have access to this high quality and timely healthcare. But in addition to that, it also protects the patients and our workforce from the unnecessary risks of infection. And it also better preserves our bed capacity and other medical resources as we struggle and fight this pandemic. Along with the Minnesota Hospital Association and other providers and stakeholders you'll hear from today, such as the Mayo Clinic, Essentia Health respectfully requests your support for Representative Schultz's telehealth initiative. And it'll allow us to continue to provide these services to a patient's residence when it's appropriate. Just so you know, Essentia Health is an integrated health system. We serve patients in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and North Dakota, and we're headquartered in Duluth, Minnesota. Since March 2020, Essentia Health has conducted approximately 100,000 virtual visits directly to patients wherever they're located. And while the number of virtual visits has leveled off since the early months of the pandemic, it still accounts for approximately 20% of all of our encounters. This technology has actually changed my personal practice, and I'd like to just share a couple stories just to help you understand. My very first virtual visit was directly into the patient's home, and it was a child, an infant actually, who was very ill. And as we were talking on the phone, she was deteriorating quite rapidly. So I was able to safely transfer her from her home directly to the hospital in a higher level of care instead of the transportation, especially in our rural community, that would be to drive to my office, park, and come up, and then I would have to call EMS to transfer her. I actually believe that it saved this child's life, and she's doing well today. I also provided mental health services to a teenager living in rural Minnesota, and it was really wonderful to finally be able to see this child with both of her parents and for them not to lose out on an entire day's of work to drive to my office to have a follow-up mental health visit. In our communities, we've seen a significant decrease in our mental health no-show rates, and we've seen improved mental health care because of this. And over 85% of our encounters in mental health are done with telehealth. In addition, our chronic care services we can provide directly into the patient's home, such as diabetes care and cardiovascular care, accounts for about 30% of our visits through telehealth. And one of my most favorite stories is the nutritionist that told me, "My goodness, my whole world has changed, and I can deliver care in a much more effective way because patients take me directly into their kitchen. They open up their cupboards, I see what's in there. They open up the refrigerator too. And in addition, I can teach them how to do a portion size on their own plates." And she's really excited about how that's changed her practice. So for these reasons, Essentia Health asks that this committee supports Representative Schultz's telehealth initiative. And thank you for your time and for your consideration.
Well, thank you, Dr. Manny. That's fascinating. Looking forward to hearing more of those kinds of stories. And yeah, no question. There is a lot that's been learned during the pandemic. All right. Dr. Pezzo, welcome.
Thank you very much. Madam Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of Representative Schultz's bill to continue the changes for coverage for telemedicine. My name is Dr. Marilyn Pezzo, and I am a pediatric hospitalist in St. Cloud at CentraCare, and I'm the current president of the Minnesota Medical Association. The governor's executive order to expand coverage for telemedicine has been critically important, as Dr. Manny has just told you. The MMA surveyed physicians and clinic administrators this past summer regarding the impacts of COVID-19. We found that at that time, nearly 30% of visits were video or telephone in 2020, compared to only 3% the previous year. 83% of physicians said that telemedicine was meeting the needs of their patients and that the patients were satisfied with this care. Although telemedicine will not replace in-person care, we can provide high-quality, convenient, safe care for many services across most specialties. Mental health visits, medication management, post-operative care, dermatology, and chronic disease management are just a few of those examples. Two factors are especially important: change to the site of service requirement, and second, coverage of telephone visits. Before, patients had to travel to a clinic or hospital for telemedicine. Now they can receive that care at home. This is important for safety during the pandemic, for confidentiality, especially so for mental health and addiction care, and for reducing barriers of time and transportation, important for all of us. I wish to call out telephone visits specifically. This addresses issues of economic and age disparity and uneven access to broadband across our great state. Many patients don't own a device that allows a video visit, or they may have a plan with just limited minutes. This reduces access. Many older patients are not comfortable with video technology and do better with a phone call. My daughter is a family medicine physician in southern Minnesota, and she has several older patients in this category, and they do better with a telephone call. So in conclusion, on behalf of the 10,000 members of the MMA, we ask you to support the continued access to video and telephone telemedicine safely from home. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Pezzo. We appreciate it. And then we have Lily Melander. Welcome.
Good evening, members of the committee. My name is Lily Melander. I'm State Policy and Advocacy Director for the Clally Association. We're the cross-sector healthcare association in Minnesota that supports and advances global leadership in health innovation and care. I appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of Representative Schultz's telehealth residency extension language. This proposed legislation will allow patients to continue to receive care in what can be a more convenient and safe location, resulting in better outcomes. This pandemic has profoundly changed many aspects of life for the foreseeable future, perhaps none more than healthcare delivery through telehealth. Although touted as a future of healthcare for decades, the COVID-19 pandemic accelerated a telehealth revolution in just a few months. Now, thanks to many temporary policy changes from the state and federal policymakers, telehealth is ingrained as an integral part of the transformation of healthcare. Minnesota's Medical Alley has always been on the forefront of healthcare transformation, as the unique makeup of the Medical Alley region facilitates opportunities for cross-sector collaboration that cannot be found elsewhere. The increased utilization of telehealth has provided another opportunity to capture the insight and expertise of this community to spearhead a significant transformation in healthcare and to further Minnesota's leadership in the telehealth space. We urge the legislature to prioritize policies that enable patients access to safe, secure, and clinically appropriate innovations in care delivery. Adoption of these policies will promote lower costs, increase access, and improve outcomes for people throughout the state. Medical Alley Association strongly supports Representative Schultz's language to extend efforts of flexibilities for care provided remotely through the remainder of the pandemic and beyond, and we look forward to working in partnership with Chair Liebling, Representative Schultz, and others over the coming sessions to continue to identify opportunities to unlock the benefits of telehealth. Thank you for your time today.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Melander. We appreciate your input here. We do have a question from Representative Keel.
There we go. Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that. It's actually for the Dr. Patzel. But what I wanted to know was, and maybe any of them can answer this, is when she made that comment about talking to seniors because they're more comfortable with a phone call than internet. And that's my experience when people call, is they're having trouble with the internet. Does that serve as well for the physician / medical personnel to discover what might be more urgent or something you can handle online or, excuse me, on the phone or maybe with a home health person that would come in? So how would you deal with that?
Identify
Dr. Patzel.
Many things can be handled well over the telephone or in a video visit. There are always things that do require an in-person visit, but that becomes pretty clear during the course of the conversation.
Okay.
And then if it requires an in-person visit, then those arrangements, you know, would be made.
Okay. So you're able to identify. Excuse me, Madam Chair. Got to get used to this way of doing it. Anyway, so that would identify it. I've experienced some telehealth or telemedicine with my aging parents, and that becomes the issue is setting it up. But visually, I think the doctor really wanted that access. But didn't want to bring an 83-year-old into the clinic at the time. So I was curious as to how that would read on the phone because you're not seeing that person.
Right. It can be a way of triage. It's better than, you know, having them come to the emergency room and have exposure and have barriers of transportation, et cetera.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And Madam Chair, I just want to say that I really appreciate, unfortunately, this is a situation we got telemedicine in actively, but I think this is a wonderful thing for our, for Minnesota in general, but very much for rural Minnesota. And in the access, I've hauled my parents all over the state for certain healthcare things. And as we age, that becomes really challenging to talk to a specialist. And I think that really gives us that access without having to drive so far. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks, everybody. Okay. Seeing no more questions, thanks to the testifiers. Thank you, Representative Schultz, for bringing this. Appreciate it. And so we will move on then to our final matter, our final bill, which is Representative Mason is going to present for us, and this is the Board of Executives for Long-Term Support, Service Fee, and Appropriations. And we have a couple of testifiers on that as well. Welcome, Representative Mason.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, and thank you for hearing this legislation. I had a similar bill earlier this year that was heard, but it didn't quite make it to the governor's desk. This legislation is essentially correcting an oversight to the 2019 legislation, and the starting date for the program is August 2021, so it's critical that we get this legislation passed as soon as possible. And we do have some testifiers that will provide the details. First, I'd like to introduce Randy Snyder, of the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Executives for Long-Term Care Services and Support.
Okay, thank you. And I had Mr. Snyder, did you want to testify first? I know you had Mr. Triple, who's also on the list.
I can go very briefly, Madam Chair, if you'd like that.
Sure. Up to you. Go ahead. Welcome to the committee.
Please. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Yes, I'm Randy Snyder, the Executive Director for the Minnesota Board. And thank you, Representative Mason, for bringing this forward. This was just merely an oversight from the assisted living implementation. Again, our board is separate from the Department of Health. A very small part of the engagement that needs to take place in order to move this forward. We have the critical need of getting an appropriation for this fiscal year because we are going to be implementing the grandfathering phase starting in January, which sunsets for all those people eligible by June 30th. So it's critical that we get to get an appropriation to spend some money to build some of the infrastructure needed for the electronic online services. Again, we put our baseline budget together in 2019. Basically, what's in front of you is a reflection of that. We are in behind the scenes. We've been working, setting up systems. We've had 16 meetings with stakeholders to establish our rules. Our rules are at the Office of Administrative Hearings right now. We hope they will be adopted by the end of April at the latest. And again, this is just critical timing is we're 7 months away from some critical action that needs to take place. And part of this is to achieve the bill that's in front of you today. The challenge of this entire appropriation is the fact that we don't know what our N is. We don't know how many potential licensees there are. We've heard ranges from 750 to 4,000 people. So this is a work in progress. We beg your indulgence as we will probably be back to right size this operations in the next two or three fiscal years. But there is that uncertainty as we move forward. We have 11 great board members. We're operating under the statute that says we have 5 years to right size our operation, and we can't expend more than we collect. There has been consistent agreement and consensus to approve this amongst all the stakeholders. We appreciate all of those individuals. There is no known opposition. We would like the purity of this bill so that we are able to move it forward and get signed by the governor ASAP, and because we need the authority to spend some of those resources in this fiscal year. And with that, I will let other testifiers take over, and we thank you for allowing this to go forward in the special session. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
All right. Well, Mr. Snyder, thank you for that. Before we proceed here, I think it would be helpful, just under the assumption that everybody on this call may not have the same level of recall and familiarity with the topic that we're talking about here. And I just would like to just to lay the groundwork just a bit more before we go forward to say, this relates back to the assisted living licensure that was passed in 2019, I think, right? Where, as people may remember, the assisted living in Minnesota is not licensed currently. And we passed a very big, complex framework for to have licensure of these facilities for the very first time. And then, Mr. Snyder, could you just explain real briefly, so the piece you're talking about is that there are certain professionals that need to be licensed as part of this overall big change. And could you just kind of give us a little context? You said how many there might be. But
yes.
What exactly is being required now that we didn't have to do before? Could you just give us that piece?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I tried to condense this and I shortened that paragraph out, but I appreciate your trying to get clarity. Yes, as part of the 2019 law, now assisted living directors will have a licensed assisted living director, an authority individual responsible at each assisted living community licensed by the Minnesota Department of Health. So there is a single source of somebody responsible for the ultimate care provided at those sites. That is the part that is assigned to the Board of Executives, which we changed our name to reflect this broadened continuum. So now assisted living directors, as of July 1st, will have a credential. There is a very generous grandfathering phase that is starting right now, and that's the critical piece that we're in front of you for today. Did that answer your question as briefly as I can, Madam Chair?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Snyder. And I, you know, just, and members, if you have questions about that, you know, please let us know. I want to make sure we all understand what we're doing here. And so, all right, I'm not seeing any right now. So thank you for that. So next up is Mr. Triple. Welcome to the committee. And you are muted still. There we go.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mike Triple, and I have been a public member of the board since 2015. I did submit some short written comments, and I'll even try to be shorter this morning, but I just want to express the appreciation that we have your hearing the bill at this particular point in time. As Randy indicated, that without this funding, it would be impossible for the board to actually get the licensing system in place prior to the August 21 effective date. In July of 2019, I was appointed as the chair of the board's committee to work on the development of the rules for assisted living licensing directors. We had a wonderful rules committee consisting of state agency representatives, advocates, including the Ombudsman for Older Minnesotans, and provider representatives. And over a course of the 15 meetings or so, we worked on a process to set educational standards, standards of practice, continuing education requirements. And we took very deliberate efforts to make sure that while the rules are designed to protect consumers through education and training, we also tried to be as flexible as possible in dealing with a wide variety of individuals and organizations that represent the assisted living community. It is very much different than what our experience had been with nursing homes, which were generally, more uniform, were under state and federal regulations. The assisted living environment is new to the board and consists of a wide range of individuals. And we had some fairly deep discussions about the impact of any kind of regulatory requirements on these individuals. At this time, the rules are, as Randy said, in the Office of Administrative Hearings. We feel that we have a good rulemaking process going on, but it is now crunch time for the implementation. And we are grateful for this opportunity, to get the appropriation. We feel that the requirements and the ability to get licensed people in place will improve quality of care. And we're just looking forward to getting the funding so that we can actually start to get into the nitty-gritty of licensing. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Mr. Triple. So there's a question from Representative Schultz, and then we have Diane Rydrick from the Department of Health. Representative Schultz.
Thank you. I just want to say that I don't think it was an oversight in the assisted living bill that we didn't do this. It was more complex than that. I think that's just too simplistic to say it was an oversight. And I also think that it would help committee to understand the $2,500 fee. So Mr. Snyder, if you could explain the $2,500 fee and then give an example so they have a better sense of who would be charged that fee and why and what it would cover.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Schultz. The only changes that did occur in the bill from 2019 were things that came up in rulemaking. And what we've decided is that this is a not to an exceed amount from those providers that will be providing the education for assisted living directors. And we think it'll be a $2,000 fee for that. They will also then provide continuing education. We have hopes that we will be able to hire someone that will be an assisted living expert that will look at the training of the initial training involved, the continued competency of the practitioner of the assisted living director, and then also the complaint management so that we can view it as a quality improvement cycle. $2,000 at three programs right now is what we anticipate. $6,000 is not going to cover the full cost of that staff member, but we did think there was an associated expense to that. And so stakeholders understood that the providers that are out there right now looking at providing assisted living education for initially trained assisted living directors would be those individuals that would be partnering with us in order paying us the fee so that we can give them a better product in the end. And that's what was decided. So that is a change. Representative Schultz, thank you for that clarification.
Representative Schultz, any follow-up?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Snyder. Appreciate that.
All right. Thank you. All right. Let's go to Diane Rydrick. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Diane Rydrick. I'm the Acting Assistant Commissioner for the Health Systems Bureau at MDH. Thank you to Chair Liebling and to Mr. Snyder and Mr. Triple for reminding us of some of the context for today's bill and some of the history that brought us here today. The 2019 legislation came about through intensive collaborative work over the course of many months involving consumers, advocates, providers, and strong bipartisan legislative leadership. And so we are pleased to see that collaborative process continue. But as Mr. Snyder noted, we're now just a few months out from implementation of the language that was passed in 2019, and we're working to make sure that we have a clear pathway for that transition from a two-requirement system to a unified license for assisted living. The requirement for an assisted living director license is critically important. It promotes quality care, it promotes effective services for residents of assisted living facilities, and it is a way of ensuring that licensed administrators are qualified to perform their duties. Implementing a process like this takes time, and the work that that the Board of Examiners is doing to license assisted living directors has to work seamlessly with the facility licensure process that MDH is putting in place. And that means that it is critical for the Board of Examiners to have their director licensing systems in place well before August 1st, 2021, to support the MDH responsibilities around facility licensure. So I am here today just to indicate our support from the Health Department for this language and for getting the Board of Examiners the certainty that they need about their ability to move forward with their role in the process and their critical role in licensing the assisted living directors. So we are supportive of these proposed changes, and we hope that they can be passed quickly in order to allow for a successful license experience for applicants and for us to be able to move forward with our role in facility licensure at the Health Department. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Rydrick, for your help here. And there's one question from Representative Bierman, but before we go to that one, I just want to clarify. We've had this discussion about the amount of the fees, but the bill before us actually doesn't set that. Am I correct? I guess this would be a question for the author, Representative Mason. The bill actually just appropriates the money to the board. Am I correct there? We're not actually setting the fees in this legislation. Representative Mason, is that something you can answer?
Right. There's been various versions of the bill, but basically this money gets the board the money that they need to proceed. And then there will be more coming afterwards. And I don't know if Mr. Snyder or anybody would like to
Maybe this would be a good one for Mr. Berg to just kind of give us the real just basic on what the bill does, because it is just a fiscal bill, is my understanding. Mr. Berg, can you do that?
Yes, Madam Chair. The language of the bill as it is now, there's been several drafts, it does actually authorize the fee. It does put those numbers, the new fee and the changes into statute. Then it appropriates $426,000 from the special revenue fund is the assumption of the amount that can be collected from those fees in this fiscal year. Just a technical note, this is not, you'll note it says this is a one-time appropriation. That's in there to avoid dealing with the setting the tails for this program going forward. As Mr. Snyder suggested, because this is new, there is some uncertainty about the amount of revenue that will be collected and the amount of licenses that will be issued. And this is designed to get them money. The 426 is based on the board's estimate of what they think they can collect in this fiscal year. And that gives them money to start the process they're talking about. But this, obviously, this isn't a one-time fee. It will be ongoing. And so the 21 legislature, as part of the 22-23 biennial budget, will need to set the correct tails for the board, the correct appropriation and tails for the board for that biennium. So this, just as Mr. Snyder suggested, gets them going on what they have in front of them now, while kind of punting on an issue about what the appropriate level of tails should be.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for that, Mr. Berg. And yeah, I appreciate that. And, you know, members, I started out this hearing by saying that the issues bringing up now are issues that we view as kind of urgent, things that need to be taken care of now. We're not trying to do the work of next session. So just want to, you know, point that out. So Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe this is a question that, you know, it doesn't have to be taken up or in detail here, but I just had a question for Mr. Snyder regarding the grandfather clause for directors in facilities, and just wanted, I guess, a little bit of more information on what that grandfather clause does. I mean, we need people to stay in their positions in these facilities, but I'm just curious what that clause may say, and if there's something you want to send me, that would be fine too. I just wanted to understand how that works.
Mr. Snyder?
Thank you, Representative Bierman. It is right from statute. So as Representative Schultz said, they did tremendous work on this. The grandfathering piece is very generous. I will send that directly to you, though, Representative. And if you have any other questions, I'd be happy to answer those for you. It is right from statute, though, that we are taking that direction.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, I don't see any more questions. Okay, if I missed anybody, just wave at me or something. Okay, not seeing any more. Okay, so, well, great. Well, we're planning to go as late as 11:30, but it looks like we will not need to go, so. Okay, can you all hear me? Good. Anyway, it looks like we will not have to go all the way to 11:30, but I just do want to do a little programming note here. We do have another time reserved for tomorrow at 2:30. And I just want to note for all of you that, as you know, there are some negotiations going on over a number of budget items. And these are items that, for the most part, have been funded through the CARES Act money over the course of the last many months here during the pandemic, the ones that'll be in HHS. And so it's now there is language being worked on, and there are these funding proposals. So what we're planning to do tomorrow is just have an informational hearing on some of these items that, you know, are the HHS items. And just to give you all and the public a chance to see the language, a chance to discuss the proposed appropriations. And although, again, it'll be informational hearings and we don't yet necessarily have agreement with everyone on these, we're trying to use our time well and hope that when we get to special session, we'll be able to have something that's been at least vetted in, you know, as well as we can do in this incredibly weird, shortened process. But that's our intention. So we'll be posting what we have shortly and invite you all to take a look at it, invite you to bring your questions. And so we appreciate that you're taking time out of your what should be your regular life to come and join us here today. And so if there are there any other questions or comments from members before we adjourn? All right, not seeing any. Oh, Representative Schultz, did you have something? No, okay. All right, well, thank you, everyone. So with that, we are adjourned.